This is a replay of the Wednesday night, October 25th, WGN show. We started right at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings, unless sports preempt us. That's from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593. My toll-free number from OneVoip for the world's best customer service. It's OneVoip. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
I'm Raleigh James. We've got 3 hours to spend together tonight, and as usual, if it's on your mind, it'll be on mine. But also, as usual, got to the end of the show last night, never did give you all I knew on what's going on with that Alaska Air pilot. And let's face it, when you hear stories like this, especially if you are a flyer commercially, which I no longer am and haven't been for years, but if you are, you worry about the guy who's in the front of the plane. Yeah, well, in this case, what we're talking about, if you somehow miss the story, it's been everywhere, is there was an Alaska Air pilot, Joe Emerson, a 44-year-old guy from the Bay Area, who was deadheading, going from Everett to San Francisco in order to, I assume, get on a flight of which he was captain. He was a 737 captain. The flight that he was on from Everett to the Bay Area was Horizon Air, which is a carrier which would operate under the Alaska banner as a commuter airline. So that would probably be an Embraer. All right, so he gets onto the plane, gets into the jump seat, which is pretty much standard stuff, is talking to the pilots, and at some point during the flight, he lunges and tries to disconnect the power to both engines. Now, the deal is they're fire handles, and the reason for this, and they have to be accessible, because let's say a flight is proceeding and there's a fire in an engine. Well, the thing that the pilot wants to do immediately is cut off the fuel. I mean, that goes unsaid. So consequently, it has to be relatively easy to do. So this isn't the kind of thing that you bury somewhere, because in the event of this emergency, you do want to turn off that fuel immediately. Well, so it is that on the Embraer, there are a couple of these levers. They're basically T-levers, and in easy access for the obvious reasons. But in this case, Emerson, the off-duty pilot, attempted to grab and pull them. And if he had, he would have cut off fuel to the engines, and that would have been it. However, the pilots intervene, and there was a very brief struggle, and 30 seconds or less, and he exited the cockpit on his own, told a flight attendant he was being asked to leave the flight deck, and then he said to her, "But I'm going to the back. You better, you better restrain me, because I could be dangerous." Now, so that's about what we knew. And what we know about Emerson is he's allegedly happily married, family man, two kids, pillar of society. Those who knew him find it impossible to imagine that he would intentionally try to harm himself or anyone else. He was a member of a flying club in Concord. In fact, he was in charge of promoting a culture of safety there. And virtually everyone, to a person, said, this is too unbelievable for me. He originally flew for Horizon for several years, about 12 years, and then he joined Virgin American, and of course, that Virgin America merged with Alaska, and that's how he came came back into the Alaska fold, and in 2019 he was up to a captain of a 737. So that's his history. So you're saying to yourself, what the hell? By the way, when they restrained him in the back hitting approach, because they diverted the plane to Portland, hitting approach, he tried to open the emergency door, and a flight attendant easily stopped him from that. He at one point said, "I'm not right," and that may be the understatement of 2023. But I'm looking all over. Firstly, I never did find out why he was in Everett, you know, what he was doing up there, and why he had to deadhead back on the Horizon plane. I don't know. I also don't know much. He claimed he hadn't slept for 40 hours, so I don't know if he was about to, in San Francisco, board a flight of his own. Clearly, without sleep for 40 hours, he shouldn't be. But more to the point comes out, he admitted to officers upon his arrest, and you knew he would be, 83 counts of attempted murder. He admitted that he had taken for the first time magic mushrooms. And of course, now this is all over. What the? Well, firstly, they're totally legal in Oregon, one of the only places. But the laws on this are just convoluted, because the whole situation is convoluted. Magic mushrooms, in other words, psilocybin, and it is in the United States on a federal level. It's a Schedule One, because theoretically it can make you high, but it has no medicinal use. Well, let's stop for a moment and say that for the last 10 years, Johns Hopkins, among others, has been investigating this. And a recent study from Johns Hopkins shows that psychedelic treatment with psilocybin relieved major depressive disorder symptoms for up to a month. So there are some uses. Now, interesting, internationally, the laws are, you know, country to country are funny, because in some places they're legal recreationally, but they're not legal medicinally. In other places, they're legal medicinally, but not recreationally. And then you get into the spores of the mushroom being illegal in some countries. In other countries, the mushrooms are illegal, but the spores are legal. So it's very convoluted. Now, in Brazil, where it's totally legal, the deal is the psilocybin and the derivatives of that are illegal, but the mushroom itself, the fungal species, is not. And the reason that it's not is that there's nothing on the book that could make them illegal. There's no legal precedent for something grown like this in the country. So that's the deal there. The substances are illegal, but not the mushrooms. And so on and on it is. So this guy, where did he get them? I don't know. But it's interesting that where he made his attempt to down the plane, and in saying, what on earth could he have been thinking? Well, what he was thinking, apparently, according to early stories from him, is he was thinking that he was, excuse me, in a bad dream, and that, yeah, I know I could have cut that, but of course that would have required me not to be lazy. In any event, he was in a bad dream and felt that this was the only way that he could stop the dream. So he thought he was sleeping, so to speak. Well, needless to say, he was not in his right mind. So that's where we are. That's what we know. That's all we know. We know that he is incarcerated, and as I say, we know initially he's charged with 83 counts of attempted murder and others. But I'm sure there's more to this story that's gonna come out. But that's what happened. So normally, when you just hear the headlines of Alaska Air pilot tries to crash plane, you think of all sorts of things. And the first thing, by the way, that everybody concluded is, no, this was not terrorism. About the furthest thing you could get from it. So that's the story there. Yeah, I finished one. Well, we've got others as well. I know Marianne in Chicago wants to talk about Natalie Holloway. Well, is that finally at an end? Yeah, it's interesting. There is a statute of limitations on murder in some countries, and so it was that Jorhan Vandersloot was able to admit it and not be facing any charges. But we'll tell you more about that too. But in the meantime, 888-876-5593. We got Don and Beloit and James on the South Side and his 5 million stories, and some of them are just so good tonight. And Andrew in Chicago, more on soap operas. And Marianne, as I say, for Natalie Holloway. And there's a line available for you. But right now, let's talk radio, because I know if you listen to the show, you're a radio lover. And I can't believe you haven't been to the Sea Crane catalog, but if you haven't been there recently, well, right now, you can find the radio of your dreams at ccradio.com, and the Sea Crane Company will give you a 10% discount off your entire purchase order of $50 or more. So, however much you buy, as long as it's over $50, but no matter how much over that is, it's still a 10% discount on the whole order. If you can't go online, that's all right. They've got the world's best customer service, and they'll handle everything by phone, including offering you that 10% discount on anything you'd like to order. And that's 800-522-8863. 800-522-TUNE. 5222. Now, if you can't go online, or if you're just looking for a suggestion, take a look at Sea Crane's CC Skywave SSB2. It's the ultimate travel radio and emergency radio, and it is something that will fit in the palm of your hand. It weighs only 8 ounces. Of course, like every radio that Bob Crane has developed, the reception is just excellent. Yeah, it just blows everything else out of the water. So, and I don't care what Bob Crane radio you pick, one might be slightly better than another, but no matter what it is, it's better than anything else on the market today. It's that simple. And that's true for the CC Skywave SSB2 as well. And the neat thing about it, of course, it's got great AM and great FM, the weather band, and a weather alert. Plus, yeah, the single sideband. You want to know what ham radio operators are doing from all over the world? That's fun. And in an emergency, it might be the first place you're going to hear from the first responders. So you can check out the CC Skywave SSB2. And if that's the one that floats your boat, 10% off for that and anything else you order. But if there's something else you'd rather have, 10% off that too. So 800-522-8863 or ccradio.com. And you tell them Raleigh sent you.
I stay so worried all the time. There's something keeps troubling me in the back of my mind.
Am I a fool for being in love?
I wanna know.
Yeah. I'm taking all that I can.
Yeah.
What does it take to understand this man?
Sure
if I know I love him, and I don't know why.
Tell me
why every time he leaves me, I break down and cry.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. 888-876-5593 would be 8888 Raleigh. And that, of course, is Ike and Tina Turner. Stacy from Algonquin said, give me some Tina Turner. Well, actually, that's an answer record to her own record. Am I a Fool in Love, 1964, on Kent, not the British reissue label, but Modern. Modern had a blues label, and it was Kent. And the answer song was, of course, to A Fool in Love, 1960, on Sue. So that's Am I a Fool in Love, and they both sound remarkably the same, but I thought a little more energy in that 1964 Kent record, so there you have it. 888-876-5593. Is 8888 Rolleye. Don and Beloit, what's up tonight, Don?
Hey, good evening, Raleigh. Thanks for taking my call.
Always.
I caught you sniffling there a little bit earlier.
No, I'm always coughing, yep.
I love using that saline solution when things get allergic to me or something.
Nothing's allergic, trust me. It's something completely else.
Right, I remember you talking about that.
All right.
Well, I told John to, I was calling. You both are welcome to share my contact info with Johnny D. But I think, a couple of weeks ago, I remember when you wrote down what his grandfather's gravesite was. This veteran of World War One, this great story, of this Italian guy becomes suddenly immigrant, becomes a Doughboy. You know, it's really quite a story.
Mm-hmm.
Well, based on what you said that night of his graveside numbers and like regiment type numbers, I'm pretty sure I've got a lot of information that I'm pretty sure he was in this thing that was it's very, very special. I think a lot of listeners had relatives that were in World War One, and mine, I know the story of mine, but this was very special. This thing, I believe he was in this thing that was Ohio. I think it was in a Buckeye, this thing called a Buckeye Division that became U.S. Army's 37th Division, which it's just to do that for a National Guard unit called this National Guard thing to become part of the U.S. Army is very, very special. Nobody was allowed to do that, more or less. Ohio was very special in being able to do that. And these different things basically were different parts. Like if you're part of a company or a regiment, you know, you might have been from Youngstown or you might have been from Cleveland. It was all local like that. And in that way, this division was much like a Civil War division, actually, before it went off to get trained and go to overseas to fight in France and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, this is really interesting. The U.S. Army had a bunch of machine gun battalions, maybe 200 of them, and this division had three battalions. And I think his grandfather was in this thing called the 135th Machine Gun Battalion. And it turns out, of course, they have their own Facebook page, and you know he's going to probably be able to find his relatives at this at his own National Guard headquarters in Ohio. I think that they might be able to help him like trace it out and everything.
Okay, so I'm looking at the grave at the stone marker as we speak, and it was PFCCO A135 MG, and then it looks like either EN or IN World War One.
Yeah, again, that is a famous battalion that was the 135th Machine Gun Battalion was one of three battalions that the Ohio thing had, the 37th Division had. And I think as we talked before, his grandfather was quite a bit older. So I think they looked at him, like he was 24, let's say, by the time the war ended, which is way older than the typical doughboy. So I think his grandfather, again, I'm just guessing here, but was in a position of, well, we can trust this guy. We'll give him a more responsible position, maybe, or it could have been anything. He could have been the company cook or something. But in general, they probably gave this to more responsible people. And their story, like every other division, there was different comics, there was newspapers, and there was a book that was made of all these different stories called The Billets and Bullets of the 37th Division, which I read through a couple of weeks ago when I was listening to guys on the air. And anyway, there's a lot of amazing stories of what these people did. You know, I don't know John's last name or anything, but I think I got onto several things that he could probably find where his ancestors' information is on several different pathways.
Right, right. Well, for one thing, the Ohio National Guard, their public affairs office, has a whole thing on it, so he could call them too.
Right.
All good information. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, Riley, you have a good one. I hope John can find his ancestors, and it's always great talking to you.
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate it. All right, appreciate
okay,
that. And I hope that if Johnny D does find him, we can find out exactly what his granddaddy did there. But yeah, the Ohio National Guard has a whole thing on that battalion. So no names that I see. A couple, but not any with Johnny D's relative's name. But nonetheless, several units. All right, so 888-876-5593. Let's find out what's going on in the world at large. Hell, it might be another world war by now. Who knows? We'll find out on WGN Radio.
Thank you.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. That's Sino and Johnny. Yes, they were brothers in Brooklyn, of Italian descent. A lot of people always put him in the Puerto Rican category, as so many of the New York artists of that vintage were, but nope, no way. And Santo turned 86 yesterday, and he's semi-retired. Johnny is his younger brother, 82, and he's still working. President of Anaraf Records, which, of course, is Farina spelled backwards. But they wrote Teardrop, which you just heard on Canadian American 1959, the follow-up to Sleepwalk, which they also wrote. But the interesting thing to me about them is clearly they were not Hawaiian, nor were they into country music. So where the heck did they find a steel guitar? And the answer is they really didn't. What was interesting is the boy's father found a music teacher who could give them steel guitar lessons, but where's the steel? Well, and so Santo went to a local music store and got them to modify an acoustic guitar that he could play like a steel guitar. And he was using a Gibson six-string on that, and his teacher had studied in Hawaii. So by the time he was 14, he was composing songs on it and formed an instrumental trio along with his brothers. So he made some money from this. And by the time he was a teenager, I think he was 15 or 16, he told his dad that we're gonna drop out of school to become rock stars. And his father said, "The only stars are in the sky. You know, get with it." And shortly thereafter, of course, they proved that at least with Sleepwalk, they were on top of the American charts once, and that was on Canadian American. They stayed together till about 1976, and then broke up. All right. So, oh, by the way, in the mid '60s, they started, and you can hear it on. They did a lot of albums and stuff. They started doing like steel guitar versions of Beatles songs, or steel guitar versions of In the Still of the Night, and I spared you all of that. All right, so 888-876-5593, and Johnny D. in Ohio, the subject, of course, of his grandfather just came up, so all right, have you learned any more, Johnny D.? Johnny D.
Well, yeah. what I learned was the Don from Beloit is very capable at all of this stuff, and that I'm a procrastinator. So I was listening, but I was watching the stuff going on in Maine, you know, where there's that shooting going on. I don't know if you know about it. You know everything. But anyhow, so I'm watching that stuff on my tablet, and I had it muted. But I'm listening to the Dawn from Beloit. I'm thinking, what the heck, you know? So I'm listening, and I'm thinking, I better call to find out what the heck I'm supposed to write down here now. You said something.
All right, well, there's something that I would strongly suggest. I was just, by the way, reading about the 135th Artillery, which was interesting. It was originally a local National Guard unit, which had been the first Ohio Volunteer Light Artillery. After Mexican border duty, they were redesignated for World War I. They served in France. And it was interesting. They also served in the Pacific Theater of World War II. So there's a whole history to this. But I would think that your best bet, and I've since completely closed the page, but let me see if I can find it again. The Ohio National Guard actually keeps historically in their public relations department keeps information on this. So I would say that's
right. I should call them our National Guard or what?
Yeah, I would. Now, let me see if I can give you a little more information on how. You also can get information like from the universities, like Case Western has.
How about Kim?
Might. Very well might. But, Ohio National Guard Public Affairs. The article that I'm reading is by Sergeant First Class Joshua Mann, but this was in 2017, so he may not be in anymore. But I would say talk to the Ohio National Guard, because now you've seen the stone. And by the way, I would suggest at some point going to that cemetery in Youngstown and brushing all the leaves and dirt off the stone, because there's more on it than we see in that picture.
Yeah, I've seen that picture.
Right,
and I'm thinking,
right.
Well, what's on the underneath yeah. that?
Right, so I would...
See, that's because nobody's going there to...
Well, of course. So, but you can, know. And you can brush the stone off. All the you know, detritus to the right of it will give you more information. But the 135th Artillery, Don is absolutely right, it has a lot of infamy behind it.
Well, you've seen a picture of my grandfather.
Uh-huh.
I wouldn't want to be in front of his machine gun.
Yeah, well, right. Or probably anybody in this battalion. So I think you got places to go, and I think if you call the Ohio National Guard, they might even have advice for you on how else to, find more information particular to your granddad.
Well, I think what I'll do, I'll call my brother Joe. Is he, you know, the golfer?
Mm-hmm.
Because he's way closer to the Calvary Cemetery. Than I am.
Then have him go over there.
I'll say, Joe, go over there and look at Grandpa's gravestone and brush off whatever's not visible.
Yes, that's Section 8.
And tell me, write it down.
Or take a picture. He's got a cell phone. Take a little selfie of it.
Take a picture.
Yeah.
He's my brother Joe. He's not in. He's still got one of them flip phones.
Well, that's all right. It'll be able to do that. Or if not, you know, hell, bring a brownie camera. I mean, do whatever you want.
He's cheaper than I am. He's so cheap, he squeaks.
Well, yeah, you can get that. But Section 8, Lot 348.
I know where his grave is.
Well, tell your brother and send him, and then let us know what the picture shows.
I will. I'll tell him, Joe, you know, do something here.
That's right. Joe,
yeah,
do something.
Tell, but,
all right.
I want to tell you, I got my cars back, and I'm not going to go on too long.
Good. We'd been wondering about
the cars. Yeah, I got them back for the Aveo with the hoses needed.
Yes, you were waiting
for
the hoses.
I got an oil change, too.
Uh-huh.
It came to $383.
Well, that's a bargain these days.
The hoses were like $100 a piece or something.
Yeah, I'm telling you, it's the way it is.
And, you know, the guy at Midas, I said, I thought you guys, get beat any place. He said, that's the lowest price you'll find.
It probably is, yes, for the 2010 Chevy Aveo overheating problem.
Yeah.
So now here's the point. You drove it home, I assume. Has it stopped overheating?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, then it's worth it.
Absolutely. It's not a worry. And the heater works.
Then it's absolutely worth it. You got a bargain.
Yeah. And then the Vibe, it had a hole in the catalytic converter.
Oh.
That's what was making all that noise. So I had to get the catalytic converter all the way back to the muffler. It was $183
Not bad.
For that.
Not bad.
And the guy tells me, man, that catalytic converter is... I forget what it was on the bill. I said $800-something it was for the catalytic converter.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I said, man, that's he goes, well, that's why people are stealing them.
Well,
he goes, they cut them off and then they trade them in. They get just for the metal, they get amount of money or something. Yeah.
All right. Well, good.
All
so
right,
so
well,
everything's running.
Everything's running, man. It's running good.
All right.
Running good. Matter of fact, I got four tires for the Vibe, too.
Oh, hey. Well, see, it's worth that. You've got two dependable modes of transportation right there.
And I didn't spend it because I was looking around, Raleigh, for some used and I'm thinking, man, I ain't paying them prices.
Exactly
For a new... I ain't paying them $5,000 for a car I was interested in, new, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Honestly. And that's not a luxury car either.
Clearly, yeah. not today it's not. All right.
Right.
Well, good deal.
Okay,
all's well. Okay, thanks. Let me know. Keep me posted.
Bye-bye.
All right, so 888-876-5593 would be 8888 Raleigh. So Johnny's got his homework. And we'll talk to him after his brother gets to the cemetery, and then he can call the National Guard, and it's all going to be fine. All right, Marianne is in Chicago. What's up, Marianne?
Hey, Raleigh. How are you tonight?
All right. How about yourself?
Oh, pretty good. We've got some pretty mild weather here the last couple days, so can't complain about that.
Good.
But I was calling to talk about the Natalie Holloway story.
Yeah, which has its own conclusion of sorts now. With Johan Vandersloot, I guess everybody's somewhat satisfied to this explanation of the murder. He admits he murdered her, and he admits it was because she rebuffed his sexual advances, so he hit her in the head with a brick and threw her into the water.
Yeah, there's a lot more behind that.
Well, undoubtedly. I mean, but this guy's bad news all the way around. I mean, he's in jail in Peru for doing the same thing years later, I think on the same date, to a woman there.
To a politician's daughter.
Yeah, well, that's why he's in jail, clearly.
Yeah, but so, you know, Johan's father was a judge.
Yes, and he's no longer in the picture.
No, he was involved in it, though. And
well,
he died on the golf course.
Yes.
February 14th in Aruba.
Yes.
Okay, I have a friend who is married a guy from Aruba, so I got a lot of the inside information. Plus going down there every year.
Mm-hmm.
His godfather was the chief of police.
Mm-hmm.
They were draining retaining ponds looking for her.
Mm-hmm.
They actually, I think it was on A&E, her father went down there and the cameras
mm-hmm.
followed him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know about this. He brought a guy with him, and the guy was, they were in another room, and he had a thing where he could hear what they were saying.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, it was Johan talking to a guy that he was sending to go dig up her body somewhere, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that's not really what happened, but the sickening part is the father is sitting in this room and listening to him describing what he did to her.
Well, you knew that was the case. I mean, the mother has washed her hands of him, to say the least. And, of course, her father being dead now, of course, explains a little while more the story is coming out. But what I found interesting is while Aruba normally has a 12-year statute of limitations, when this was codified in Birmingham recently, Aruba said, well, we're not done looking at this. And they've asked the United States for all the information to be sent to the Aruba prosecutor's office. So they might be looking for a way. But, you know, either way, you're talking about adding stuff onto his 20-year sentence.
How much did he get? He got time for embezzlement, right?
That's the 20 years he got from Birmingham. That's for extortion and the other thing.
Yeah, when he asked them for money and said, I'll show you her body. And
yeah, right, right.
The money.
For defrauding and extorting the family. So that's
right.
20 years on top of the sentence that he has in Peru, which I don't know, I think that was 30 something years originally, whatever, but you know, the idea that he'll see the light of day is not too great at this point. And if he did,
what I heard in Peru, he's living like a king. They think he's a god over in that prison.
Well, yes, they do, because he's...
He's got prisoners taking care of him, smuggling stuff into him. What kind of a sentence is that?
Well, the rule of prisons, it's not a pretty story, but, you know, you'd figure that a person like this is clearly a sociopath. There's utterly no debate about that. And what are sociopaths best at? Of course, they will charm those around them into anything they damn well want. And there's no better place to do that than in a prison atmosphere. So now,
well,
that,
you know, that bar that he met her in, they had been trying to close that down for a while because they knew what was going on. But because it was such a big tourist attraction...
No, it was a big... And, you know, when you say they know what was going on, he wasn't serializing, killing people left and right. I mean,
there were other people there that were slipping drugs and drinks there.
Yeah, right. And you know what? That probably happened at every popular bar on the island.
Oh, not just on that island.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Everywhere in the world,
They
finally closed it down, I think, a year after she went missing.
Okay.
Nancy Grace brought the world down on them.
Well, wasn't that, that was a chain, and wasn't there American involvement in that chain? I mean, that was an easy mark.
I don't know, because, you know, it was a young crowd, and me and my sister and my girlfriend, we were too old to go in there.
Right, it was a Carlos and Charlie's.
It was a what?
A Carlos and Charlie's.
Yes,
and
you're
that,
right.
I'm pretty sure that's an American-based chain.
You're probably right.
Because, you know, that's not a foreign name to anybody in American cities. It's all over the place.
But, you know, they were trying to keep it quiet because that's a big tourist place.
Well, of course. I mean, that you know, and, you know, you see a lot of it in the Caribbean islands, things like that. But Las Vegas has a Carlos and Charlie's. West Palm Beach has a Carlos and Charlie's. New York used to have a Carlos and Charlie's. Austin had a Carlos and Charlie's. I think that's where I ran into it first. But so it's around. I think that was Charlie Skipsey, but I don't know. It's since the 60s. It's probably Mexican based.
You're probably right.
Yeah, I think Senor Frogs. That's part of the same chain. I think it's all part of Grupo Anderson, and I think that's
Cancun. Yeah, they had a Senior Frog down there too.
Right,
right.
Exactly. I think it's Grupo Anderson at a Cancun, but you'd have to look. There was a senior Frogs in Myrtle Beach, and Orlando and Miami Beach. I don't know if they still are. You know, I don't get out much anymore. But anyway, yeah, I'm pretty sure it's Grupo Anderson. So that would be Mexican domiciled.
Well, she, you know, went missing in May. We were down there in January. And my girlfriend says, come on, because she knows a way around the island. We got in the car and we went to his house. Everybody knew where he lived.
Well, yeah.
It was a decent neighborhood, off the beaten path. Most of the houses had fences around the property, not to keep you out, but to keep things in, like chickens, dogs.
Yeah, right.
There was a cage with a monkey in it next door to his house, and we're all over there just looking and walking around and taking pictures, and all of a sudden my one girlfriend says, what if he comes out? I go, what if he comes out? There's four of us and one of him. What's he going to do?
Well, you're right. Plus, he chooses
I'll take him down personally for what I know that I think he's done.
Oh, that would have made headlines. All right, well.
So what? Marianne found the murder of Natalie Holloway and took him out.
There you are, right. But I'm sure we've not heard the end of him. I can't wait to hear what his next scam is, because there will be a next scam. But it'll also be interesting, now that his father is dead, to see if Aruba decides they're going to do anything. We'll find out.
You know what? I don't think they will. They don't want the.
Of course they don't. But remember this: depending on how much publicity this gets, they also don't want the unresolved nature of it. That's not good for tourism either. They're going to have to weigh how they want this to go.
Today, right now, Nancy Grace is running a special on it.
Yeah, but you know, fine, that's great.
They don't want her back down there.
Well, of course,
she came down the first time.
Right. Yeah.
She brought every camera, all the streets were blocked off, and it brought so much negative stuff.
Well, right. So that they'll look at it from a PR standpoint of what's the best way to handle it. So,
well, the best way to handle it is the first year I was down there, and somebody dented our rental car, so we had to go to the police and report it. But the police want to say, no, it's generally a very safe neighbor island. He said the Aruban people are very gentle, very, you know.
All right.
Nice.
I got it.
Just remember, not everybody on the island is an Aruban.
Well, they all say that. And I got to go because it's time for the news, but I'll talk to you soon. Thanks.
Okay,
all right.
Bye.
And that's where we'll pick it up next hour. We've got two more hours of this, and we've got Andrew, we've got Vern, we've got James, and hopefully you two on WGN Radio.
There's a man in the funny papers we all know. He lived way back a long time ago. He don't eat nothing but bearcat stew. Well, this cat's name is Alley-Oo. He got a chauffeur that's a genuine dinosaur. And he can knuckle your head before you count to four. He got a big ugly club and a head full of howler. likes great big lions and grizzly bears. He's the toughest man there is alive.
WGN Radio, I'm Ronnie James. That's Dallas Frazier. He wrote it. Yeah, the Hollywood Argyles and others sang it. The Hollywood Argyles had the hit, but Dallas wrote it. And he recorded it, actually, in 1966. He wrote it in about 57, but recorded it in 66 on the Elvira album. And, of course, he wrote Elvira as well and sued for his trouble, don't you know. He would have turned 84 on Friday and sadly died January of 2022 in Gallatin, Tennessee, 82 years old. And I will forever feel guilty because he was on my callback list, that infamous list. And so John said, "Well, Raleigh, when did he last call?" And I gulped and I said, 2011? Oh, man. Oh, well, 888-876-5593. We got Vern in Arkansas. Welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hi, how are you doing tonight?
All right, what's going on, Vern?
Well, being 91 years old, I sit around and muse a lot.
Yeah.
And I was sitting out on my deck with 80-degree weather down here in Arkansas, I'm using this afternoon about names, particularly what I named my daughter after I first saw her, which was when she was about 2 minutes old. I changed my mind from two names I'd picked out and went to an immediate third one. But I got to thinking about names that people name their kids and hang on them for the rest of their lives. I used to work with a disc jockey on WHO for a time. His name was Jerry Carr, and so they had to name his daughter Kitty.
Oh, no.
And then I had a friend who was a newspaper man and hadn't talked to him for years, and he called up one day and during the conversation told me that he and his wife were pregnant. And I said, "Hey, you're getting pretty old for that." And he said, "Yeah." I said, "You got any idea whether it's going to be a girl or a boy? And he said, "Well, I don't care which because it's going to be named Mac." And I said, "How do you figure that?" And he said, "It's for middle age carelessness."
Oh, no.
But the one that tops them all is Bill Lear, the guy who came up with the Learjet, among other things. William Lear named his daughter Shonda.
Oh, no, he didn't. Yes, he did. And she's a gospel singer, kind of, and all that. She's a speaker. She's still absolutely alive and active, Shonda Lear. But I never put that together until you said that. Oh, yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Bill and Moya Lear.
That's about Shonda.
Well, you know,
that's about all I've got for you tonight, Raleigh, but it's a little lighter than what we've
well, absolutely.
Been listening to about all this serious stuff here.
All right, thanks. I appreciate it.
You bet. See you later.
All right. So, and how about that? Yeah, Shonda Lear is a motivational speaker of sorts, and she'd talk about her father from time to time, but it never even occurred to me. Shonda Lear. Oh, God. What were Bill and Moya thinking? Well, obviously, I was completely unaware. So that's the deal. So she's still with us for sure. But yeah, I thought, and you always have famous people naming their kids stupid things like Apple, but nothing topped, as far as I'm concerned, Frank Zappa with Moon Unit. But you know, she turned out to be a lovely young woman and very well adjusted, and was a testament to her parents' normalcy, even though in many ways, Frank Zappa never appeared to be, but he was quite normal. However, Moon Unit? Oh, well, 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh, John is in St. Paul. Welcome to WGN Radio.
Hello, Raleigh. Ellie Oop, wasn't Kim Folly involved in that song?
Well, Kim Folly was involved with it because of Gary Paxton. That was in the Hollywood Argyles version, but Dallas Frazier wrote it.
Okay.
But absolutely.
Because I don't know anything about Dallas Frazier, but I sure know plenty about Kim Folly.
Well, I think the world does too, unfortunately, in more ways than one. But yeah, the Hollywood Argyles was Gary S. Paxton and Kim Folly. And, of course, they were also, you know, doing the skip and flip stuff and all that kind of stuff.
Well, I first knew about Kim Fowley when I saw him. I had a DVD that had clips of Tom Snyder's show, and the theme was punk and new wave that era in the late 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill Graham and Robert Hilburn and Fowley were the three guests kind of in a panel conversing, answering questions from Tom Snyder. It's kind of interesting. That was 1977.
And that was late in Kim's career. Kim was, his father was a character actor, Douglas Fowley. And he was born in L.A., and so he would have graduated high school there in 57. And, of course, he wound up going to University High reasonably same time as Jan Berry and Dean Torrance and, you know, Bruce Johnson, Nancy Sinatra, all those people. So a lot of people went to Uni High. But he had contracted polio. And then he got involved with Sandy Nelson and you know, all that line of people, the Phil Spectors and the Nick Vinays and all that. So, yeah, and he...
Do you think that he was a sociopath?
No. And I know why I know why you're saying that, certainly. But, no, I don't think he really was.
Okay.
I I wouldn't want to have him over to dinner myself, but but I also wouldn't wouldn't warn the neighbors if he was coming by.
Maybe too strong a word.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to throw a couple names at you, and one I know that you know, and that would be Donna Halper.
Of course, Donna. Yes, absolutely. I like Donna.
And maybe like 20 years ago, you two could have hooked up and done a great podcast or show by yourselves at any time. It would have been great to hear both of you on the air talking a lot of radio history and so forth. She's also a good listen. And but I bring her up. I think she was connected to Rush, the rock group.
Yes, she was. Absolutely. That's 100% true. And I am 100% not an AOR fan at all, but she was. And that happened while she was at WMMS in Cleveland in the 70s. She was their music director.
Yeah, and she is pretty well acquainted with Geddy Lee. And I was going to ask her about what she knows about Stratomatic Baseball, the tabletop game that I play, because Geddy Lee was supposedly a fan of that too, and that's something I'm going to maybe email her about there too. But then as far as doo-wop, I wasn't familiar with doo-wop. Now I'm, having been a Raleigh James listener, I've got more than my fill of it and some knowledge of it. But back in the early 2000s, Doug Hirth, is that a name
sure.
that you...
Sure. Oh, at Pittsburgh.
Oh, boy, you know that name?
Of
wow.
course.
How do you know Doug Hirth?
Well,
how do you know that name?
You know, I mean, radio is very small. Keep this in mind.
Right.
But, you know, there's only four of us, really. No, I mean, everybody kind of knows everybody. But sure, sure, absolutely. Now, of course, I kind of bristle when we are talking about doo-wop because, of course, doo-wop is a more recent phenomena in terms of naming it that. And I think we can probably thank Gus Gossert for that. But regardless, the bottom line is it's vocal group harmony.
Well, I used to listen to Doug Hirth's show. He was in Pittsburgh radio,
KDKA,
off and on.
Yeah, KDKA 1020. I think
well,
that's
for a while in the mid '80s, right. And he did a trivia show too.
Oh yeah, absolutely. But I mean, I think he was at KDKA. He was at TAE working for Tom Clendenning, I think. But I always liked Tom. But in any event, he was
and
on.
And he ended up at. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, he's been dead, what, like 2011, the beginning of 2011. And,
right, correct, yeah.
Yeah, that was that was there, yeah.
But so. he ended up on a station called WPTT, and it was kind of
oh, the
one
point.
Of those marginal.
Yeah, the point, of course.
Yeah, and that's when I got to listen to him because I'm in Minnesota, so I used to listen to him on KDK, which boomed pretty well.
Uh-huh.
And so I, in the mid-'80s, I caught him there.
Yeah.
And I caught him on the rebound near the end of his career because this was the internet period where he could do podcasts, and I could get the podcasts on my desktop.
Uh-huh.
mm-hmm. back then. And so I would listen to his shows on the podcast, and then he would moonlight and do a doo-wop show on, like, Saturday or Sunday nights on another Pittsburgh station. So he was really into doo-wop.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Big time.
No,
and I didn't know if you knew that.
Yeah, I did. PTT, when he was there, that was the McKeesport station. That used to be WIXZ. That used to be Wixie. That was McKeesport. And, yeah, I remember that. And, sure, Uncle Dougie loved doo-wop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of those reduced signal stations at night, and one of those marginal, you know, where, you know, I could get it clear because of the internet, but if you're in the Pittsburgh area, you might not be able to get it in certain places. But.
Right. It always had, like many stations like that, it always had signal deficiencies.
Yeah, but he had a trivia show, too, and he would invite people to just come on, certain callers and guys that he knew, too, people that he knew, and they would do trivia show roundtables. I remember on KDK he did that. And but his main thing was Americana and nostalgia. He was huge on that. Now, he was a big Gene Shepard fan.
Yep.
Me, not so much. What about you? What did you think of Gene Shepard?
Well, I thought Gene Shepard was great as far as that goes. And he was not only on New York, but he was in limited syndication in a couple other markets, including Miami. And he could weave a tale like nobody else as far as that goes.
But he could.
Doug used to talk to, you know, as I like to say, the lunatic fringe, you know, fun.
He did, because Doug was a bit of a lunatic himself.
Right. So,
I say that affectionately as well.
He had his Doug-isms, if you will, no doubt about it. So,
he had those idiosyncrasies, those quirks of like boop-a-da-boop-a-da-boop and then all that, you know, he would have that way of speaking and. It was kind of fun. I always look forward to listening to him because I never knew during, say, a three-hour period what he would pull out of his head because he had a steel trap memory. And even stuff that he didn't like he would say, geez, I hate Columbo or the Twilight Zone or whatever, and he would know more about it, you know, anecdotally than somebody who might have been an aficionado of those shows just because he had an amazing memory.
Yeah, absolutely. The thing I always wondered, you know, when they found him, the medical examiner said, well, we'll have to do an autopsy before cause of death will be ruled. And then later, I just heard that nebulous natural causes, but he was 66 years old. What were those natural causes? And to this day, I don't know. Do you?
Well, you've hit on an interesting point and one that I've thought of a lot before, because Pennsylvania law, they don't allow autopsy information to be public. That's what
I think
Illinois law is the same.
No, most states now, unfortunately, it's pretty common that you won't get that. But so with that in mind, and they're just saying natural causes, it would take somebody who was close to the situation to know, and I don't know. Do you?
Well, no, I do not, and I've tried to find out. I'm assuming it was just heart failure, probably on his couch at home. He lived alone in Bellevue section of Pittsburgh. And he had these close friends who were trying to call him and they couldn't get a hold of him, so they did a wellness check and then found out, and it was probably at least days after he had passed away.
Right, it was. And then when it finally came out, they just said natural causes, and to this day I don't know what happened.
And that's because of Pennsylvania law, I believe, because they closed the books on it. They don't allow public information on autopsies, and I think Illinois law is the same. I had tried to find out what the cause of death of the late Les Grobstein. I'm not sure if you know that name.
Oh, yeah, well, absolutely. Chicago, of course. Not under that name, but yes, of course.
Yeah, and he died, like, suddenly, and nobody really knew how or what happened. He just didn't, all of a sudden didn't show up for work.
I don't know. I think there was actually an answer on that, and I should, you know, be more aware because,
Brody was a sports guy on one of the one of the sports stations, and he said he was filling in the overnights after Les had passed away on his show. And he said it was COVID, but I've never seen any confirmation of that.
Well, and usually that's just a contributor. You know, they're usually, you want to know about what else is going on. But yeah, I had heard that part too, but it still didn't tell me much. And of course, you know, his family's privacy, I guess, trumps all. But yeah, he was 69. I think he died. Gosh, it's coming on 2 years now.
Yeah, it surprised me. I used to call him once in a while. He was kind of difficult to talk to because Les wanted to do the talking and not really the listening. So, I mean, not everybody is a great listener. and so not everybody's going to master the art of talk radio and that sort of thing. But Doug Hirth was an interesting guy in Pittsburgh. He's sort of a forgotten guy by a lot of people. I'm so glad that you know who he was. You know more about him than Donna did, but I don't hold her to that, because it's a very difficult thing. She kind of specializes, I think, in the Northeast area of that corridor in New England. And I did ask her one time about a guy named, and so maybe you know this, maybe you know a guy named Jeff Charles.
Too common a name. Give me a city.
And he spells it G-E-O-F-F.
Right,
Jeff
right.
Charles, and he used to be on the air here in the Twin Cities in the 80s. He was kind of an off-the-wall guy and sort of a drug fiend. He went down to Miami, which is the perfect place for oddball in radio. And so he went down there for a while, and then he went up to Providence, Rhode Island.
I think he's in Sacramento. And I think that's the last I heard that he was doing voiceover stuff.
Yeah, his website, he's supposedly doing voiceover because I saw his website there, but I think he's just putting it there. I was tempted to send him a message, but I think he's just posting the website because there's nothing else for him to do other than maybe try to get some voiceover work because of it.
Well, he was on Clear Channel or iHeart station in the area, I think, for quite a while. So
in Rhode Island, yeah. He's in the Rhode Island Radio Hall of Fame, I don't know about Radio Hall of Fames, but I mean, they're not necessarily the hardest to get into, but... Right?
Yeah, well, it depends, you know, of course.
You know, it's like the saying, is, you remember Warhol, of course, said everybody's going to be famous 15 minutes.
Right.
But I like another saying, it's like someday every one of us is going to be in some Hall of Fame somewhere.
I'm adamantly trying to stay out of them, but hang on a minute. Don't go away, because I'm going to see if I can find anything else more recent about them. Don't go away. All right, we'll see if anything comes up. And then we're going to get to James on the South Side and all his wonderful stories, and Andrew in Chicago, soap operas, and Room for You, too, on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Charlie Fox, Inez, and Charlie Fox. Very mostly Inez on that. Charlie would be 90 Monday. Sadly, I think he died in 98 in Mobile. Had leukemia just for 64 years old. Inez, however, made it to last year. She was 84 and died. I'm not sure if it was in Greensboro where they were from or not. Brother-sister act, not husband and wife, to say the least. But most people think about them for Mockingbird. So, of course, I had to play something completely different and went by Hurt by Love. Charlie wrote that. and 1964 on the Symbol label. All right, so we're talking to John in St. Paul. And interestingly, I don't get too much about his professional life, but I do have his home address and phone number, which I won't give you on the air. But he is, we'll just say he's in Carmichael, which is in Sacramento County. But I don't know. I've seen various tidbits, but when it comes to radio, I mostly see about the guy who did play-by-play for Eastern Carolina, but he spelled it J-E-F-F. So that's all I know. All right. Well, I don't think that that John is still with us, but I appreciate his waiting anyway. So there you have it. And yeah, I would defer to Donna on that, if nothing else, due to his extensive Rhode Island background. All right. Andrew in Chicago, what's up tonight, Andrew? Are you still there?
Yeah, I am.
All right. What are we talking about?
Took you long enough. I'm kidding.
Yeah, absolutely. You're so right.
An hour and a half.
Well, you know, let me tell you, if it was off the air, it could be 20 years.
That is true. So, yesterday I was listening to your entire show, and you were mentioning Slope was at the end.
I was.
With that one guy, and you guys were trying to figure out the name of the character, and you kept saying Sam Morgan.
And?
Do you remember that?
Vaguely.
Okay, so the character I think you were thinking of was you two were trying to name was either Patch, or a.k.a. Steve on Days of Our Lives, or Jason on General Hospital. You kept saying Sam with a guy.
No, that's Samantha, right, and that's not the right person. That's Killing Monica.
I laughed my ass off, and I tried to call him in.
But yeah.
Or Sunny Corinthos. Anyway, yeah, an hour and a half for that. However, God, there was something else. I was talking to my dad the other day, and he went on about how much he hates Dick Clark because of the whole Alan Freed deal.
Well, he should, less for Alan Freed than because of and it wasn't Dick's fault, but he was the guy there, because of the Bob Horn disgrace.
Bob Horn?
Yes.
I didn't know about him.
Well, Bob Horn is the original host of Bandstand. And it was Bob Horn who started it in 1952. What happened when Triangle, which owned it at the time, the Annenbergs, when they put WFIL-TV6 on the air, this was a time when networks weren't providing much programming. You had to put a lot of local stuff on. And so Bob Horn was a guy, and they had he had a sidekick for a while, Lee Stewart, a car dealer. But anyway, Bob Horn originally was just hosting these movie clips that they had done in a syndication thing. They were just terrible. So then he decided, well, I think I'll do some music clips. And, you know, after a while, what he noticed was the kids who were listening to WIP at the time, he'd go over to their building where WIP was located in downtown Philly at the time in Center City, and he noticed that the kids would, at the at the little restaurants, leave their little booths and counters and dance to some of the records. And he thought, well, I think I've got an idea. And he went back to WFIL-TV6 and decided he'd have a dance show. And he went to the local high schools and rounded up some kids. Now, what's interesting, this is 1952. So you're talking pre-rock and roll. This is pop standard era. You know, this is going to be more of the Joni James than it would Little Richard. Well, so this show did very well. Now, within a couple of years, of course, here's the birth of rock and roll. And the Eastern Seaboard is lined with these suddenly teen dance shows. And, of course, you got Bob Horn, the originator, in Philadelphia. And you've got Milt Grant in D.C. And you've got Gene Loving in Norfolk. And you got, of course, Buddy Dean in Baltimore. And on and on. So by 1956, ABC's looking at this thinking, and most of these shows were strip shows. In other words, they were 5 days a week on after school, that kind of thing. And so ABC's looking at this, and they're thinking, this would be good, but we don't want to do it in New York because of all the union problems and other expenses that we have doing it here. And so they look around, And, of course, Triangle was important to them because not only did the Annenbergs own WFIL, but they're the people who own TV Guide. All right. And so there was a sweetheart relationship there. And so they made a deal with WFIL. But what they said was, you know, Bob Horn, you know, we don't want him. He's too old. Now, let me also mention that Bob Horn, as far as I'm concerned, was a magician because he's the only person I know who went from the pop standard era into rock and roll and not losing the kids. And the reason he didn't lose the kids was that he loved the music, and it was evident. And, of course, he didn't look the part. He wasn't what they wanted. And so ABC had said to FIL-TV, well, we'd like to syndicate it, but we don't want him as host. And so at the same time, Dick Clark had come down. He had graduated from Syracuse University a few years before that, and he was doing nights on WFIL radio. And he looked the part. He was perfect for that. And so they kind of decided they were going to groom him. But, gee, how to get Bob Horn out of his contract? Well, as most contracts in media will contain, there's a moral turpitude clause. And so it was that they set him up. Now, I'm not saying that Bob Horn was pure the driven snow, but what they set him up with was absolutely a setup. And I always used to say, well, you know, the problem is that Bob Horn likes young girls and old wine. Well, of course, they got him. And ultimately, he was cleared of the charges. But sadly, the charges were so insidious and, you know, just really got to him on every level that the truth of the matter is he did ultimately, after he lost that job, wind up driving drunk and he had an accident and he maimed a girl. And there's no doubt about that. So anyway, they got rid of Bob and they put Dick Clark in there. Now, again, I don't fault Dick Clark for that. Although what I will say is Dick Clark knew nothing about the music. You know, he didn't even like it. No doubt about that. But he looked the part and all that kind of stuff. And all I would have asked is that when Dick Clark did those, you know, anniversary shows and retrospectives, and he wrote the books and he had the Rock Roll and Remember, and he'd do a lot of interviews. And people would always ask him things like, well, you know, back in 1952, what's the first record you played? And he'd always answer, well, you know, I really don't remember. But when we went national, well, of course he didn't remember. He wasn't there. How hard would it have been to say, you know, the creator of this show was Bob Horn, and he never did that. Almost never.
Wow.
I'll say almost never. Occasionally, there were a couple times when I did hear it. But for the most part, he owed Bob Horn more than a debt of gratitude. And Bob, by the way, went to Houston after that. And in fact, he was a great salesman as well. And he started the concept of the Midnight Madness sales at the big box stores. And he did well there in Houston radio. But ultimately, he died. And it was Jerry Blavitt who paid for his funeral. So that's
interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's...
I hope you make that book for free or give me a copy of it or something.
Well, I don't have a copy to give you. That's why I might make it for free. I didn't save copies. But I've still, you know, got the stuff in a form that could be digitized, and I very well may do that. But that's that was my big issue with Dick Clark. Now, as far as the deal with ABC and what's his name? Alan Freed. All right. I can't really blame Dick for this either, but again, I have no love lost with him, but it wasn't fully his fault, anybody who's looking at the Dick Clark and Alan Freed situation. What happened there was, and I might have told you about this or some of this, the problem was that ABC, which skated in the quiz show scandals because they didn't run any quiz shows, well, when it came to the Paola scandals, they discovered early in the game that they had a liability. And the liability was that they co-owned the Dick Clark Saturday Night Show, the Beechnut Show, as we called it, because Beechnut was a sponsor, that they co-owned the Beechnut Show, and Beechnut was engaging in plugola. And so, not Beechnut, what's to promote plug-ola? The show. Okay, see, there's payola and there's plugola. Both of them are along the same lines. With payola, what they're saying is, if you play a record, you must identify that you were paid to play it if you were. With Plugola, it's that way for commercials. If you advertise something and you are paid to advertise it, it must be advertised as a commercial. In other words, when they break to a commercial and you know that Duncan Hines is advertising a cake or something, you know it's a commercial. But when a host will say, travel is provided by American Airlines, if American Airlines is not providing travel and they paid you to say that, that's Plugola if you don't log it. Okay? So that is that was part and parcel of this whole scandal. And so the deal is ABC realized, oh, my God, we're liable. Because, you know, remember back then, it was not illegal for Alan Freed to take money and not do anything about it because he was not a licensee. He was a host. And in fact, when they hired him at WABC, when they hired him over there, the lawyers for ABC actually said, well, now you're with the ABC family. We hope you're going to be plugging that Ampar product, you know, ABC Paramount. So it was sort of something that was expected and known. But, of course, they weren't about to go down for it because they were the licensee. They could hang for it. So what they did was they crafted a declaration for Dick Clark to sign, which took a lot of creativity to make him pure as the driven snow. And, of course, Goldens had made him get rid of all his record label and publishing and all that kind of stuff, which he resented till the day he died. But anyway, Alan Freed was really not aware of ABC's deep involvement with this. And when ABC came to Alan Freed and said, you have to sign that you never took payola, he said, I can't sign that. Of course I took payola. He said, then you're fired. And that's basically what went down. But Alan Freed never understood why they had to protect Dick Clark.
Interesting.
So that's what happened.
So they had to protect Dick Clark.
Because they were co-owners of a show that was engaging in Plugola, and they were a licensee.
Oh, so Dick Clark and ABC?
Well, no.
Were co-owners?
Yes. Well, Dick Clark's production company and ABC were co-owners of the Saturday Night Show.
Okay. Thank you. Anyway, that's basically it for tonight.
All right.
Talk to you tomorrow or whenever.
All right. Bye. Looking forward to it. Thanks. Appreciate it. All right, so there you have it. And so hope that makes sense. And yeah, John even said to me, you should make that book available because you know you're never going to do another print. I'm not going to do another printing. There's just no way. But so maybe I will get that made available to you. 888-876-5593 is 8888 Raleigh on WGN Radio.
Look like a heaven and lips like a cherry wine. She can sure enough make my little light shine. I get funny feelings up and down my spine. Cause
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Well, that was the line. Giddy up, boom, pop, boom, pop, a mow, mow. They got him sued. Dallas Frazier wrote Elvira, released it in 1966 in Capitol. It was not a hit. I loved it at the time. Other people released it too, like Baby Ray. Not a hit. Nothing happened. Then, of course, the Oak Ridge Boys hit, topped the charts with it. Million seller. Now there's money. And here come the Rivingtons, the group that did Papa Oom Mow Mow. Sue them. And they won. All right, Dallas had to split the royalties with them on Elvira. Just insanity. All right, so 888-876-5593. We got James on the south side. How's it going tonight, James?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing?
Better than 22 people in Maine.
Yeah, I didn't send that one. When I saw it, I said, it was too many ones that I kept running into to bad news.
Oh, yeah, no, I know. And, of course, that's such a fluid situation. We've heard of a name of their person of interest, so to speak, but and I've seen that place and place again. I have yet to see any reason other than, of course, clearly this is an individual unbalanced who has had mental health problems in the past. That to me goes without saying. But usually, even in that instance, there's something that precipitates it, something in their twisted mind that says, yep, now's the time to go out and shoot 22 people. And a lot more than that, of course, they shot, but that's how many people have died so far. So, and of course, we're all watching that closely. But I've yet to see anything where anybody is coming forth saying, well, this is what might have triggered it.
Yeah, and really, like there's some who say, oh, we will, there was some scientists who like to say, oh, by 2050, we will have mental illness under control via AI and different other things. I'm like thinking, you have more faith than I do in this.
Well, the other problem, too, when you start on that path that becomes very dangerous is the only way that you're really going to contain this is with the kind of prophylactic action that puts us in a police state. You really cannot create predictive patrolling, so to speak, or there's no freedom.
Yeah, and in fact, even the Soviet Union didn't completely, they thought, oh, serial killers are a capitalist bourgeoisie problem.
Right.
Then, of course, Andrei Trikatilo proved them very wrong.
Right. Well, of course, you know, they'll call it anything they want for their purposes. But the bottom line to that is it just doesn't work. All it does is imprisons society in the hope that you're somehow going to prevent. And sadly, in a free society, there are things you cannot prevent.
You can legislate to the wahoo and basically it's okay. You can't predict, because that's the as they would say, as they once, I think the best line I've ever heard from is to the undiscovered country, the future.
Yeah, well, there you are. So. We have a ton of stories here, thanks to you. And what are your favorites?
Okay, well, it seemed like chocolate seemed to unfortunately get into. A young mother goes down to Brazil. A palm reader gives her a piece of chocolate, and she ends up dying from it.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, okay, I'm not certain which was more tragic, that one or the finding out that where the couple are suing Panera over the caffeine loaded lemonade.
Well, yeah, that's an interesting story, that Panera story, because my first question is, do they make the contents of the product known? In other words, if a customer's in there, can they say what is in this product and get an answer?
Yeah, I kind of wonder about that. You know, there used to be a Panera right near me. Now, this one a little further down, but I mean, it's still, I haven't tried the caffeine into. I'm assuming this is like those Monster energy drinks where it's really caffeine. Okay, the problem with caffeine is, first off, it's a diuretic.
Oh, of course. So hang on right there. We're going to pick it up after the news. Talk to you in moments. Don't go anywhere. And you either. 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio.
Me. Somebody stole her heart. Ellery Queen, if you're so keen, won't you help me find my sweet thing? Yeah, yeah.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. That's Tavares, one of my all-time favorite groups, even back when they were Chubby and the Turnpikes. Well, in this case, we're talking about Tiny. Perry Lee Tiny Tavares turned 74 Monday. Happy, happy. Born in New Bedford and grew some of the group born in Providence. And Chubby and Butch are still here. Ralph no longer, however. So couldn't help but play Who Done It, one of my favorites, though I like them all. All right, so we're talking to James on the South Side about the 9,832 stories that he provided us this week, including the dreaded chocolate. Yeah, it seems that there are so many ways you can die. Let's count the ways.
Yes, and okay, let's see now. Not the as far as the loaded lemonade. Okay, caffeine is not only is it a diuretic, it's also a stimulant.
Well, and you know, this is a very interesting story, as you know. And, of course, Panera is getting all sorts of publicity for the drink. But it's interesting, though. The lawsuit claims that it wasn't clear that this was, in fact, an energy drink. But what we have, sadly, is a young woman who had a known condition that caused her to be prone to problems with caffeine. Now, you'd think that anyone who had a caffeine problem would be ever on the lookout for what is in this product. So I went to Panera's site to look at their wonderfully new charged drinks, so they say. And they do say, with as much caffeine as our dark roast coffee. Now, that's what the lawsuit is talking about. You know, well, what size? What this? What that? Well, the problem is that if you take a look at their website, and by the way, if I have a disease that might do me in, you know darn well I am going to take a look at the contents. I am going to ask for this. And sure, you can find the overview, but you also can get the detailed ingredients, and it will tell you right there. So it would seem to me that when it says, for instance, in the regular size, 260 milligrams of caffeine, you don't even have to read the ingredients and add it up. 260 milligrams, and that's, by the way, in the medium. In the large, it's, you know, more like 390, and of course, more than 400 say goodnight for many people. So I'm not sure how they prevail. What do you think?
Well, you know, okay, the fact that they even had, okay, the sad part is, okay, if you have a condition, yeah, you should, and you're trying something new, and it's actually, they're talking about, it should have really had done due diligence before she even took one sip.
Yeah. And I would hope that that's the way that it's going to turn out, because, you know, my first thought is, well, if they've been obscuring the ingredients, and I ran across that years ago when I was on the air in San Diego, there was a promotion they wanted me to do with Cinnabon, actually. I'll tell you what the product was. It was Cinnabon. And so I said, okay, I need an ingredient and calorie count. Well, that's proprietary. Mm-hmm. We won't give it to you. They would not give me, so I said, then I can't promote this, I'm sorry. And, you know, now it might have been they just didn't want to tell you how many calories were in it, but the bottom line is, you know, last I checked it, it's an ingestible, it's not like a pill, but you're going to eat it. I want to know precisely what's in it, and they weren't willing to tell me. Now, I don't know to this day whether that's still true, but I would think that if I had any condition whatsoever, I would not eat anything or drink anything where I wasn't acutely aware of what was in it.
Yeah, because it's too easy to become basically basically what you would say a cold meat cold piece of meat in the refrigerator.
Yeah. And by the way, now I just looked up Cinnabon. Now they are telling you, they're not telling you everything, but they're telling you that the classic Cinnabon is 880 calories. I have a feeling that's why they didn't tell me. The caramel pecan bun is 1,090 calories. But anyway, 880 calories, it tells me how much fat and saturated fat and sodium and all that. Now, it might very well be that I could get a better count than that. But initially, and we're going back over 30 years ago, the bottom line was that they were not forthcoming in that. But, you know, what can I say? 880 calories in one Cinnabon. Okay. I think you'd probably need to walk for the next day to burn that off.
Oh, yeah. You're going to be doing some serious walking.
Yeah, right,
now,
right.
Unless you really have to, unless you need just a boost to your morning workout, then maybe you might want to do this. But there are easier ways to get more productive calories.
Now, we have many brain parasite stories, and then we have the amoeba stories, of course, as well. But here's a woman who caught a brain parasite from her cats.
I said, now, this is very sad because you figure the how and the why, and then you say, okay, it still looks a little fishy.
Yeah, well, right. So we normally toxoplasmosis, which was one of the things, she had others as well, but undercooked meat, things like that. But of course, contaminated cat feces, cleaning out that litter box, that could potentially do it. So now you can't have cats. We know you can't swim in the water because of the brain amoeba. And, you know, it's getting to the point that just breathing is dangerous.
Oh, yeah. Although, guess, okay, there was one really nice story about a dog who woke up owners and basically the 17-year-old
dog had a stroke. That was a great family pet, and he was a border collie, nice looking dog, and wouldn't leave his parents, the stroke victim's parents' room. Just finally, they got up to see what was wrong, went out, and obviously saw that their son was in dire straits. So now they've decided they're going to leave the door open to their son's room, and he's going to be fine, but he's going to be a lot of unfortunately therapy and stuff like that to get him there. But he'll be fine. Then we have the idiot who donated her engagement and wedding rings to Goodwill.
Yeah, I'm like thinking, how?
Yeah. I do know how. She didn't realize the rings were stored in the pocket of a hoodie when she dropped them off at the store. But, my God, I can actually see that happening. So, but the other thing is, I thought that before you donated the clothes, you were supposed to wash them.
And also you look in the pockets. Make sure the pockets are clean, that sort of thing, yeah.
Yeah.
But I guess things aren't as they seem.
Well, and so apparently nobody has determined that they have found this.
Oh, boy. Well, okay. Unless somebody decided who hadn't looked, they had just simply put it and said, oh, I'll just put it aside till I need it next winter. And then all of a sudden, they find it then, which will be sometime another month or two now, maybe.
Right.
And then you say, okay, we will not go into all the
about people who are behaving badly on all and on every continent in the world.
Oh yeah, oh but yes,
except Antarctica.
Yes, yes. No, it is worldwide. We're not alone here in the States. Well, as always, this is such a wonderful collection of stories, and thank you, thank you, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, talk to you soon.
You take care.
All right, you too.
Okay.
Yeah, hundreds of stories. You know, I always exaggerate and say it's 8,432 stories or whatever, but it is hundreds and hundreds of stories that James sends to me, and but it is absolutely frightening. If you bleed everything in every one of these stories, you'll never go out of the house again. It's that, and I mean, I can see reason why you might want to believe that anyway, but nonetheless. And I skip over the political stories for obvious reasons. That's for other shows. So we're not going to get into the Mideast because no one has the solution that I know, and God knows it's not going to come out of the mouth of a talk show host. But in any event, we'll skip all those. Although breaking, of course, is the story in Maine. And, you know, when something like this breaks, 22 dead and others wounded and all that, yeah, I start to at least try and find out what's going on in the story. And the most frustrating thing to me is you'll hear all about who they believe the perpetrator to be and the suspect that they're looking for, and you'll find out all about the people who were shot. Not a word about what triggered it. So, and I guess maybe you never know, but I would think something. Well, all right, we'll leave that where it is as well and come up with something happier, I hope. Like your call, 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio.
She comes on like a rose, but everybody knows she'll get you in touch. You can look, but you better not touch. Poison ivy, poison ivy.
Late at night while you're sleeping, poison ivy comes a creeping around.
Man, she's crazy. She'll really do you in if you let her get under your skin. Poison ivy, poison ivy.
Late at night while you're sleeping, poison ivy comes a-creeping around.
Chicken pox will make you jump and twitch. A common cold will fool ya, and whooping cough can cool ya.
The poison ivy, Lord, will make you itch.
You're gonna need an ocean of calamine lotion. You'll be scratching like a hound the minute you start to mess around.
Poison ivy.
WGN Radio, I'm Riley James, and well, the Coasters on this date in 1959 started their three-week run at number one on top of the Billboard's R&B chart. Who would have thought about it with a song about venereal disease? Nothing makes you think romance more than that. All right, well, 3 weeks, number one, I guess it worked. That was Lieber and Stoller. It was an interesting time on the charts in 1959. This week, in fact, So Many Ways by Brooke Benton entered the chart this week, and Say Man by Bo Diddley peaked at number 20, and Shout Part 1 by the Isley Brothers didn't do so well, peaked at number 47, but hey, the best was yet to come for them. Also, O Carol by Neil Sedaka entered the top 40 chart. So that was what was going on in 1959. As far as what's going on right now, well, that's why we need you, 888-876-5593. That would be 8888. Raleigh, we can talk about that. Jeannie Black turns 86 today, and you're saying, who the? I know the feeling. Well, she actually is famous for doing an answer record to Jim Reeves' He'll Have to Go, He'll Have to Stay. And she wound up building an entire career on that, truth be known. She died in 2014 in Orem, Utah, a couple days before her 77th birthday. Bootsy Collins turns 72 tomorrow from Cincinnati. Yeah, and he was in the Pacemakers originally, and James Brown hired them as his new backup band, the JBs. Yeah, indeed. And, of course, the Bootsy's Rubber Band and all that. He retired from live performances in 2019, but still around, and that's good to know. Don Davis turns 85 today, born in Detroit. Yeah, writer and producer of a number of things, including, probably most infamously, Johnny Taylor's Who's Making Love to Your Old Lady While You Are Out Making Love. Mahalia Jackson would have been 112 today. Yeah, moved to Chicago as a teen, and I don't have to tell you about Mahalia Jackson, legendary when it comes to the gospel world. But it's interesting that Minnie Pearl teamed up with her, because Mahalia Jackson had chicken dinners, and then they combined the chain, the Minnie Pearl chicken dinners, and yeah, that was not bad for a while. I have no idea what happened to those. A number of country music singers have tried. Kenny Rogers Roasters, that wasn't too bad either. I don't know what happened to them. Or who else was it? Bill Anderson's Poor Boys. No, I wouldn't try that. All right, so what else do we... Helen Reddy would have turned 82. Yeah, sadly, that was not a happy ending for her. Born in Melbourne. And had Addison's disease, but then that went into dementia, and she she died in 2020, and it was a sad ending all the way around. So what else do we have? Well, on this date in 1956, Little Richard was in St. Louis at the Kiel. That was just like the best venue ever. And it was an opera house. And I mean, in the true sense of the word, not like the Grand Old Opry. It was, you know, they meant it. It was classical performances and all those cultural things. But since it was a community venue, they had some of the best, you know, R&B and rock and roll concerts ever there. Just, and you know, the tickets were like $1.50. Well, like the Little Richard show in 56. They called it the Top 10 Review of 1956 at the Kiel. Two big shows, 8 and midnight. Bill Doggett, Big Joe Turner, The Moonglows, Faye Adams, The Five Keys, The Five Satins, Etta James, The Robins, Tommy Brown. Tickets $1.50. Oh, if you want the primo front row seats, that'll cost you $3. Oh, man. Doesn't get better than that. 1958 on Dick Clark's Saturday Night Show, the Beach Nut Show, is the infamous Beach Nut Show. Buddy Holly and the Crickets, Robin Luke, Frankie Avalon, Bobby Day. And what else do we have in 58? It was not at the Kiel, but there was a rockabilly show in St. Louis on this date in 1958. But Johnny Cash, Sonny James, and Carl Perkins. Oh, wait a minute. It was at the Kiel. Well, I'm telling you, the Kiel was a multi-purpose venue. How about that? $1.50. Carl Perkins, Sonny James, Johnny Cash. Yeah. How about that? So I'm telling you, the Kiel was the happening place. And I don't know of any city that did as well. Well, it's time to find out what's going on in the world at large. And we will do that right now on WGN Radio News from WGN Radio.
I watch her picking up their tips off the tables, and see them smile as she brings another round. That dress she's wearing shows she's all woman, and it reminds me I once had what they want now. That girl who waits on tables used to wait for me at home, and she waited till all her love was gone. I'm too late, but I still worship the floor she's dancing on. To wait for me at home.
WGN Radio. I'm Riley James. Well, that was his first single on RCA, Ronnie Milsap, 1973. Tell you in a minute how that came to be. But just last month, he announced that he was retiring. So it was a good run for Ronnie Milsap. Born in North Carolina, and while he was at the School for the Blind, he got introduced to R&B and just loved it. And did a lot of it, and wound up ultimately going to Memphis and working with Chips Moman. But before that, he got signed to a couple labels, but the one that was probably the most prolific in releasing stuff of his was Scepter. And none of it hit, but there were probably a dozen Scepter records out there. But so here he was, he's in Memphis, and he's working for Chips, and Chips is trying to get him a record deal. And Jerry Bradley, of course, at RCA at the time, kind of dismissed him. He said, I know about him. He's that Memphis guy, does R&B and rock and roll blind guy. But, you know, does he sing any country? So they played him That Girl Who Waits on Tables, which you just heard. And Jerry said, well, that SOB can sing country. And they signed him. And that was the deal. But when you look at the group of country performers today, when they pay homage to artists days gone by, virtually all of them have something to say about Ronnie Milsap. And what was so funny is that Ronnie never wanted to sing country. Not that he didn't want to sing country, but he was basically doing R&B and was happy doing R&B. But Chips, you know, obviously put him together and said, you know, and there have been no looking back since then. So he says goodbye in a concert last month. All right, so 888-876-5593 is 8888-RALEIGH. And Jan is in Dallas. What's going on, Jan?
I was wondering if you could help me. It's around 1959, I believe. It was a black artist who sang I'm in Love, was kind of the refrain. And then it was like he was picking petals off, does she or does she not?
Oh, God. Yeah. Oh, no. It's kind of like last night when Mark called and took me like 5 minutes before I could say, oh, yeah, Beverly Bremers, don't say you don't remember. It's going to be like that, I can tell. It's the does she or does she not that's hitting for me. And I will have to, I'm writing this down so I don't forget this, Jan, because otherwise I will completely forget. But I'm going to think about it. Yeah, does she or does she not? Yeah, I mean, yeah. Okay. Yeah, that I'm in love fits, you know, half of the genre out there.
I know.
That's in every song, but the does she or does she not? I agree. That is ringing familiar. All right. Well, good. You'll keep me up at night. All right. Hopefully
well,
I'll...
thank you so much.
Oh, absolutely. I'll think about it, and you'll be the first one to hear it when I shout it out. Well, if I'm on the air, that is. All right. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah. But, you know, it could be like 5 o'clock in the morning when I get up for a bathroom break or something. Oh, yeah. No, that's all John needs to hear. 888-876-5593-8888-RALEIGH. Maybe you will know. Does she or does she? Yeah, man, I tell you. Lisa is in Dundee. What's up, Lisa?
Hey, Raleigh. You know, first of all, how is Helen Reddy older than Bootsy Collins?
Oh,
that really surprised me.
No, it shouldn't.
I feel like Bootsy's been around forever.
Well, so had she. Yeah, Bootsy's just 72. Actually, he was born in 1951, so he's a youngin, you know.
And yeah, he's only, 5 years older than I am.
And he's 10 years younger than Helen Reddy.
She must not have became popular until she was older, I guess.
Right, well, in the States. Right.
Yeah, that's
right.
True.
Right, it was in the States.
Was popular.
But she was still, that's latter 20s when her hits started happening. So
I don't know, I just that surprised me. I have a Bootsy Collins album from his rubber band. Anyway, that's
sure,
not why I call it.
Sure, but no, he's a relative youngin'.
Yeah, great though. Okay, this whole topic about this woman who drank this lemonade just irritates me because you wonder if she's going to get any money. Of course she will.
Well, she's dead. Her family, you mean?
No, I mean her family, yeah. And she wasn't a young child or anything. She was in her 20s, wasn't she?
Yeah, I think she was 21 or so. She was a college student. And
so she should have known better, like you said. I mean, what's the name of it's not just called lemonade. It was called
Charged Lemonade.
Charged Lemonade. Now, what in the world would she think that meant.
Yeah, lemonade.
I don't know.
Yeah, caffeinated lemonade chargers in three great flavors. Well, see, I'm not sure I'd know what it means, but if I knew I had a condition, the first thing I'd say is, can I please see the ingredients?
Exactly.
You know, it's, I've done that in a number of places where I just want to know precisely, you know, not in nebulous terms, and don't tell me the percentage of sugar. Show me every darn ingredient and how much of it is in this. And,
right.
Yeah, absolutely. And then there's other things, you know, like the Jack in the Box tacos. I'm like, please keep the ingredients from me. I don't want to know.
But those are so good.
That's right.
Do
I know,
not
but
tell
you know,
me what that mixture is.
Right, right. Do not mention like hog lips or something. I don't want to know.
No, no, no. Yeah. I don't care. They're good. If that's what's in there, they're good.
Right.
But no, I mean, it's just like the lady, when you go all the way back to the lady who put the hot McDonald's coffee in between her legs and it spilled.
Yeah.
And she got all, I mean, people just don't take accountability for the things that they do that they shouldn't do.
Yeah, I agree with this. And, you know, this is hitting the news now probably because of the suit that's filed. This actually happened a while ago, from what I understand.
Well, and the fact that she died.
Well, of course.
So that's
of course. But now the question's going to be again of how available were the ingredients to this girl? And, of course, how much responsibility did she bear if she knew she had a condition for asking for them?
And it sounds like she, I mean, I don't really know that much of the story, so I don't know if it affected her immediately or just don't think.
It was quick. But the thing in the suit that got me is she avoided energy drinks at the recommendation of her doctors. Well, apparently, she didn't avoid everything because, like you say, charged lemonade.
What did she think when I first heard that story? Not tonight, but must have been yesterday. I thought, what did she think that word meant? I mean, I won't. I'm on some medications. I won't even drink a energy blast or a Red Bull or anything like that because I'd be so afraid of what it would do. But she actually has a condition, or had.
Well, right, and they're saying that they're blasting that it was advertised as plant-based and clean, containing as much caffeine as the restaurant's dark coffee, dark roast coffee, and you know, and all that apparently is right there on display at the store. And it seems to me that if I've got a caffeine issue and you're telling me that there's as much caffeine as anything, I want to know exactly how much caffeine is that.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, she shouldn't get any money. It shouldn't even go to a lawsuit.
Well,
but I guarantee you it's going to go to a lawsuit.
No, it is a lawsuit.
Family's going to get money.
Yeah, it is a lawsuit. It was filed in Philadelphia Court of Common Pleas on Monday. So that's
unbelievable.
Yeah, no, that's the kind of thing. And, you know, I would think if I'm Panera, probably I'm going to be wanting to settle because, you know, my legal fees might be bigger than that. But
You know, years ago, I burned myself fairly badly with some microwavable Kraft Cheese Whiz.
Ooh.
I put it in the microwave longer than I was supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, it was late at night, and I was eating it in my underwear, as most people do.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was walking to the chair, I spilled it,
mm-hmm.
and it went on my leg, mm-hmm. and, you know. I could have sued Kraft probably for not saying on the label, you know.
Yeah, do not walk in your underwear if you've
I did the right thing. I went in the bathroom, shaved my legs, and then I drove myself to the emergency room.
Right.
So I could get checked out. But, I mean, if you're going to do something like that, I don't know. And this is why we have labels on hair dryers that says,
well, that's exactly it.
In the bathtub and all that kind of stuff. Because
I still want, you know, because, you know, every one of those labels, of course, came from something. And I still want to know when they say, don't use while asleep. How the hell can you use a blow dryer while you're asleep? I'd like to know this. It could save a lot of time.
Listen, there is a show out called Strange Addictions. And there is a woman who has to sleep with her hair dryer on. And she sleeps with it in bed. I'm not kidding. And they just did an update on that story, and she still does it. So that's probably why that label's on there. Geez.
Well, you know, I would assume it happened because somebody was killed in the process. But she's still with us. But there you know, that's a lot.
There are people that do silly things.
Oh, I know. I know. Don't even start me with vacuum cleaners. But yes, I know. So You can only imagine. But, yeah, I haven't seen any lawsuits about that, but I've often wondered.
I know. It's just craziness.
Well, it's just like on the full moon, you know. I've had friends who worked emergency rooms in Los Angeles, and, I mean, the things that people would put inside themselves, so to speak, were just... did you think was going to happen? You know?
Yeah.
Because, of course...
there is another good show called I Was Impaled, and these are people that accidentally were impaled by something.
Okay,
that's a good show.
Here's the a good show, huh? I Was Impaled.
Well,
it's
interesting to see how they got out of it without dying.
The problem I have with a concept like that, I Was Impaled, that means they found enough people to be in each episode. How often does this happen?
For a few seasons.
For a few seasons?
Yes.
I'm looking this up. I Was Impaled as an hour-long reality docuseries. I'd hate to be a booker for that show. How do you find these people? In which real people were impaled on non-human objects and survived. And they have enough of them for a show. Oh,
yeah. There was a lady that was hanging a planter or something, and when she fell, the shepherd's hook went in her eye. And she had to pull it out of the ground and walk next door with it to get help. They took her.
Just
very interesting show.
Because
she was fine and she didn't lose the eyesight in her eye. And some of it's just, you know, lady driving in a car with the windows open and too close to the side of the road, a branch, you know.
Impales
right
her. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I'm just aghast that they have an entire television show of this. Yes, in one episode of I Was Impaled, a woman riding on a truck on a dirt road was impaled by a 2-inch thick branch of an evergreen tree, similar to this one, which broke through the passenger side window. The branch penetrated her neck and shoulder, but she was saved by medical personnel. Oh,
right.
Man.
And I've seen that one.
I
watched it every week.
It sounds like it. Yes. Well, so...
I love that kind of stuff, though, because I want to see, first of all, how they don't, you know, kill themselves and what they have to do to survive and, you know.
No.
And those people, do you think, you know...
I guess this explains the tabloids, period, because if they can have entire shows about that, you can get a weekly tabloid out of anything. I'm glad to say it's a British production.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, however, shown in the United States on the Discovery Fit and Health channel. I don't know how fit and healthy any of these people are. In Europe, it's called Body Invaders.
Oh.
I know, good title.
That sounds like a whole another show.
It does, doesn't it? Foreign objects which puncture human bodies include fence posts, garden shears, and bicycle poles.
Yeah.
Plural! So this has happened more than once. Alrighty then.
Isn't that something? And I've learned something else tonight. I didn't know the song Poison Ivy was about...
About the clap? Yeah, what did you think?
Yeah, I thought it was...
What did you think it was about?
Poison Ivy.
No, it's not about Poison Ivy.
I mean, isn't there a plant called Poison Ivy?
Yes, of course. Yes, of course there is. But if you listen to the lyrics again, you'll see that it's not about getting Poison Ivy, like from the plant.
But you can't use calamine lotion.
No, you have to use Quell, but that's not the point. They couldn't say that, and no one would know what Quell was. But anyway, you know, actually...
But that's what makes me think it's another poison.
When I say it's, it doesn't have to be gonorrhea or syphilis. It could be scabies. The bottom line, it's a contact disease that you get from being with the wrong person.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, that's I don't think that Lieber and Stoller sat there to try and define exactly. But it's the old line. I spent one night with Venus and 6 months with Mercury. So anyway,
I guess I don't. I just sang along and
They wanted you
what
to.
What it was all about.
They wanted you to.
That's why I love your show so much.
Oh, well, excellent. Yes. Well, that's definitely what it was about. So talk to you later. Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Bye.
Bye, Ann. Yeah. Many years ago, I saw an interview with them and they actually copped to it. They admitted it. But which, of course, you know, what did you think it was about? Well, obviously, Lisa thought it was about Poison Ivy. Well, we'll get to Jimmy P on the South Side and Sherry in Naperville, and there's room for you two coming up on WGN Radio.
Hey, man.
What's that, boy?
I want to tell you about your girlfriend.
What about my girl?
But you don't look strong enough to take the message.
I'm strong enough.
I might hurt your feelings.
My feelings already hurt by being here with you.
Well, I was walking down the street with your girl the other day.
Uh-huh.
And the wind was blowing real hard.
Is that right?
The wind blew her hair into my face.
Uh-huh.
You know what else happened?
What happened?
The wind blew her hair into her face.
Yeah.
And we went a little further. You want to hear the rest of it?
I might as well.
The wind blew her hair in the street.
Since you told me about my girl, I'm going to tell you about yours. I was walking down the street with your girl.
Yes.
I took her home for a drink, you know.
Took her home?
Yeah, just for a drink. Oh. But that chick looked so ugly, she had to sneak up on the glass to get a drink of water.
You got the nerve to call somebody ugly. Why you so ugly till the stalk that brought you in the world ought to be arrested?
That's all right. My mama didn't have to put a sheet over my head so sleep could slip up on
me. Hey, look here.
What's that?
Where you from?
South America.
What's that?
South America.
You don't look like no South American to me.
I'm still from South America.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh South James. Texas. Here's some fine signifying for you. 1959, same man, but Bo Diddley peaked at number 20 on the pop singles chart. Yes. I just looked up Hound Dog, which is the Lieber-Stoller autobiography, and Jerry Lieber says, pure and simple, poison ivy is a metaphor for sexually transmitted disease. The clap, hardly a topic for a song that hit the top 10 in the spring of 1959, but the more we wrote, the less we understood about why the public bought what it was. It didn't make sense. It didn't matter. We were having fun. She comes on like a rose, but everybody knows she'll get you in Dutch. You can look, but you better not touch. All right, so we've got Jimmy P. on the South Side. Welcome to WGN Radio.
Hey, Raleigh, listen, that song about she loves me not.
Yes, what do you think?
What I got is it's a ballad. What I got is she loves me, she loves me not. She doesn't care, she cares a lot.
Yes.
How happy I will be if she tells me that she's in love with me. Does that make any sense?
Yes, who did it?
I don't know. It's a ballad.
Oh, yes, I know it's a ballad, and I can hear that in my head. I was hoping you were saying, oh, and here's
she
who it's
loves
by.
Me, oh, she loves me not.
Yes,
she doesn't care. Oh, God.
Yes, absolutely. That's the song.
That's the song, yeah.
Oh, no. Oh, no, this is bad, because this will keep me up all night.
You and me both.
Oh, man. And, of course, then I'll be shouting it out at the most inopportune moment, you know, like in a contract negotiation.
Well, if I think of it, I'll give you a call later tomorrow.
Excellent. And I'll keep thinking about it, too. Thanks.
Okay.
All right, good deal. And I'm going to stop talking, and if it's not right, then Adam will find 3 minutes of something to play on WGN Radio.